We'll open up the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Thursday, February 19. I'm going to go a little bit out of order here briefly so we can send Senator Girard on his way. And I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 414. Mr. Stembridge, tell us what this does and have the good senator come up.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 414 increases the proportion of highway funds allocated to counties from 24.38% to 34.38%. It declares an emergency would take effect upon passage.
Okay, thank you. This is Senator Girard's bill. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you, Chair Metzger. I'd like to start out by saying that I was the only Republican legislator to sit through the Timber Receipts Task Force, and I was appointed by the governor, and that was a real learning opportunity for me. And every one of you got this huge book, so I just kind of clipped some stuff out of it, and each one of you have your own specialized packet, so you can kind of see what the impact is for your counties. But as far as roads and overall expenses go, some counties like Curry and Josephine County, for example, probably it's around 70% of their total budget is going to be cut. And with that in mind, if you go to page 2, you can see in your own counties exactly what the road fund differential is going to be. Now, there's three different charts there. The first one is the PL 106393 is the federal package that was given. So you can look at your own counties and see the millions of dollars that are going to be lost over the long haul because of the timber receipts going to be reduced in 4 years. The second chart shows that it varies slightly by the board feet that is harvested. That's at 1 billion board feet timber harvest. That shows what would be lost. And we're at a very, very low harvest right now. And it shows if we double the current harvest, what the loss would be. The next chart, which says page 9, which is the page 9 of the handout, shows you the decline of payments that are going to be paid by the federal government over the four-year period, of which goes into 2011, and which will be roughly about 40% overall. It also, if you go on, it kind of shows the summation on roads, and I know that's the reason I came to this committee, is that my bill deals with transportation. The state has about 8,000 miles of highway. The county has 26,800, and cities have about 6,400 miles of roadway. If you go down to the next chart on page, that says 102 at the top, it shows you kind of a rough distribution of how that went out in the 2729 biennium. Now, by statute right now, it sits at 60-24-16. 60 for state, 24 for counties, and 16 for cities. Now, after talking with Senator Starr, I understand since 2001, they've been kind of going under a little bit of a formula change from 50 to 30 to 20. Now, when I actually ran for my position, I had to get appointed, of which Senator Schrader cast a good vote. She voted for me. And the reason, one of the questions I was asked, though, is what I would do for Clackamas County and their road fund. And that was, I promised that I would bring forth the option of changing the distribution formula. Now, my bill changes the distribution formula from, let me see here, 34% and 16% for cities. I'm not sure that that's reasonable. But the nice thing about this bill is it has a nice relating clause, and I didn't want to take it back and get it changed to update it. Probably if I was going to do it, I'd do it 50, 30, 20 and lock that into statute. But if you go to page 103 on this little handout, it shows you how drastically the fall off is going to be for dollars for county fund roads. And by 2011, it is going to fall to 40%, and by 2013, it falls down just to the base level. If you go to page 104, It shows some of, start at some of the recommendation. One of them I actually voted against, but I thought I'd include it because I think it's very valid, even though it wasn't something that I thought was a good idea. The first thing was to change the county right-of-way so that counties can charge for right-of-ways. I happen to vote against that, but it's something that probably needs to be considered by your committee. There's another recommendation to combine maintenance facilities so that ODOT could have one with the county and the city and local facilities. I thought that was a pretty good thing. But what I'm kind of harping on and what this bill presents is recommendation 27, which would modify the distribution formula for state highway funds within the next four fiscal years to establish a minimum base level, and they gave a dollar amount here, $4,500 per road mile for county arterials, roads, and collectors. So once again, the whole premise of this, and I do not have the specifics as to where this formula should actually be, but I do think that we need to tweak the distribution formula to help those counties that are just going to be decimated by the lack of timber receipts in 4 years. So that's the reason for the bill. I hope you give it some consideration. It's kind of thrown out there so you can make good use of it. And I kind of open things up for questions.
Thank you, Senator. Well, your point is certainly valid in terms of the need and the reduction of available funds to meet the infrastructure, and I absolutely agree with you. On two or three different occasions, I have visited most of these rural counties and talked about those different needs and where those revenues are. And of course, one of the things, and we'll be talking about this more in this session, is not only the distribution of those funds, but the inability of the total pie to meet those needs. And you know, as you know, the committee, and we'll be working with you and our other colleagues on trying to increase those funding for infrastructure so that not only the state, but as you have pointed out, the counties and the cities will have the ability to build infrastructure so that businesses can grow and expand and maintain the businesses that are there. Really, really appreciate you bringing this up and also articulating to us, where this glide slope is, because it's very, very, very real. Questions for Senator Girard? Senator Berger.
I just thought this isn't a question, but I just wanted to make you aware that in Coos County, they have just laid off 22 road workers, mm-hmm. just out of their road department. Mr. Chair, when you took your transportation trip around the state, I'm sure you noticed the real need of the county road system. I mean, in other words, it's just deplorable in some areas, and I think it's an embarrassment to the counties. I think they really want to get their roads in better condition. So I think this is certainly a good conversation to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Senator Schrader.
Yes, I just wanted to thank Senator Girard for bringing this forward. As being recently having worn a county hat and working closely now with my county on transportation issues, this is going to continue to be a problem. I am glad you brought this forward. I think that all of us, whether we're in urban / rural county, or in urban county, I think we're going to really be needing to take a close look at how we maintain our roads with these dollars, let alone even constructing new infrastructure. So thank you for this. Appreciate it. I know I see some county folks here today, so I'm assuming they may step forward.
Any questions? Thank you. Yes, Senator.
The one thing I kind of that I took back after going through this was the actual number of miles that the county has, and that's again, just to reiterate one fact: 8,000 miles for the state, 26,000 miles for the county. So I really appreciate the opportunity here, and maybe we can tweak the formula. Thanks again.
Thank you very much, sir. Michael Savaggio, State Treasurer. Amy Joyce, Art Schlack. Mrs. Baggio, why don't we start with you, and we'll just go right from my right to my left.
Good Chair Metzger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Salvaggio with the Office of the State Treasurer. I am here today to express deep concerns our office has with Senate Bill 414. As you are aware, the State Highway Fund is a shared resource for the state highway system, county roads, city streets. The primary funding sources for the fund are fuel taxes and various vehicle fees. 24.38% of available monies in the fund are distributed to counties currently. 15.57% is statutorily reserved for cities. Senate Bill 414 shifts the allocation to counties by 10 percentage points, and that translates into a loss to the state highway program of over $120 million per biennium and a reduction of funds available to secure ODOT's debt service payments on existing bonds. Without a corresponding revenue increase, this move could reduce ODOT's future debt capacity and possibly affect the state's contractual obligations to bondholders. For example, if Senate Bill 414 passes and there is a revenue drop of 20%, the state will be in violation of certain bond covenants regarding debt service coverage for its senior liens. As an example of revenue drop, since we met with the rating agencies in 2007, ODOT has experienced revenue projections down 12.6% for 2009. Even if Senate Bill 414 passes and there is no revenue drop, in the current market, a reduction of funds available to secure the debt service could contribute to a downgrade in ODOT's bond rating. In 2007, Fitch gave ratings of AA to OTA 1 and 2 projects based in large part on the capacity of the State Highway Fund to back those up. Their stated concerns specifically included the fact that the apportionments mentioned in Senate Bill 414 were subject to legislative changes. In terms of implications for the state treasury, this would mean higher borrowing costs. I'll defer to ODOT as to what effect a revenue drop will have on project scheduling and capacity, but in terms of selling our bonds, it means less projects for more money.
Thank you, Sazad.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, go ahead. You had a question, Senator?
Let me ask you, and perhaps it's drafted incorrectly, but aren't counties just a subsidiary of the state? Mm-hmm. And so all it is like saying, we're going to take it from this pot and put it in this pot, but it's still a subsidiary of the state. So therefore, I mean, it's allocations of what roads we're trying to spend those dollars on. If we put in 414 an ability to call back some money if we're short on bonds, then it would fix your problem, correct?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, I would ask our bond counsel to, if there were chairs available, I'd ask our bond counsel to approach and speak to that. I don't want to be out of line and say something erroneous regarding the specifics of how a bond covenant calls for such a backfill. My financial knowledge simply does not go that technical. But 414, as it's written, certainly doesn't provide for such a move. May I ask if Lynn Nagasako is here from Department of Justice?
Yeah. Oh. Why don't you come on up, and maybe if you can help with Senator George's question.
Now, as I understand it...
Please identify yourself.
I'm sorry. Lynn Nagasako from the Department of Justice. The concern about Senate Bill 414 is that there are ODOT bonds out there, which are not general obligation bonds. In other words, it's not the state's creditworthiness that's on the line. The repayment source is strictly from the state highway funds. And to the extent that you impair the ability of that highway fund to repay those bonds, you affect the rating. And if the monies available in the highway fund fall sufficiently low, that may cause a violation of the bonds themselves.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. I guess what I'm saying is that, and maybe I'm incorrect on the law here, but I always thought that the counties were just a division of the state of Oregon, if I'm not mistaken. And so it seems like to me, it's not like we're transferring this to a private sector. We're keeping this within the transportation system of the state of Oregon, and it seems like to me that, I mean, if there needs to be some kind of second tier, like we passed Senate Bill 414 and says that bonds have the first priority to repay, and then mm-hmm. in case we don't make it, but then the distribution can go out. It's not like you're transferring it out of the state of Oregon. Do you see what I'm saying? You're not even transferring outside of the transportation system. And so if we wrote this correctly, I think you could do this without affecting the bond system, a bond rating.
Well, my understanding is that, yes, the counties and the cities are part of the state of Oregon. However, legally, their obligations are totally separate from the state of Oregon. You can't, and their funds are totally separate. They are not interchangeable or intermingled.
I guess I just think there's probably a way to fix that problem, but, okay. But I guess we'll see. Maybe the counties could have a better answer. But thank you very much, Lynn. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Savaggio? Yes.
Yes, I'll just make a comment about that, and that is that within cities, we have county roads, and we also have state roads. For instance, Ocean Boulevard was a state highway until we negotiated and the city of Coos Bay took it over. So the system itself is all one. I mean, we've got all this intermingling. The maintenance of those roads and highways depend on who owns it and who has it. I guess that my question is, would you be better off trying to help the counties with their roads, or would you be better off for them to give them back to the state to take care of and have the state have all the county roads?
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Senator Berger, without trying to seem evasive, I would just like to clarify that it is not my intent to speak to the underlying value of the legislation, and I am here to communicate only the concerns and possible effects that Treasury has identified with the legislation. I beg your pardon if that's not a sufficient answer.
I think the main thing is that in evaluating which is best as far as the legislator is concerned, and I can only speak for myself, what I would have to evaluate is, are we better off helping them, or are we better off as a state in having to assume them if the county becomes totally unable? For instance, 22 people out of Coos County, I would suspect that their road situation is critical.
And maybe when we have Mr. Slack from the counties can address that too, for Senator Verger's question when Mr. Slack speaks. Any other questions for Mr. Savaggio? Thank you. Amy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. Department of Transportation would be significantly impacted by the bill. Mr. Savaggio already addressed the bonds issue, so I won't hit that again. He's much more qualified than I. The department would need to cut approximately $60 million per year from its budget, where it currently uses state funds as opposed to federal dollars or bonding revenues. Some of our programs that use state money have statutorily based funding levels, such as the modernization program, special county allotment. So we couldn't cut from those without a corresponding statutory change to those statutorily created formula. The most likely source to cut would be maintenance and operations, which is, for the vast majority, that's funded with the state funds, which would be dropped by the $60 million per year. So that is the impact on the department.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Joyce. Any questions for Ms. Joyce? Mr. Slack.
Chair Metzger and members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. First, Mr. Chair, I would like to thank Senator Girard for bringing this bill forward and focusing a light on part of the dilemma that is facing counties, and that is with respect to transportation revenue at this point. We greatly appreciate the fact that he was part of the governor's Federal Forest Task Force. He was an active participant, and I believe as a result of that has a deeper understanding of not only the county system of roads, but the county's ability to raise revenue and to continue to maintain and preserve the road system that we have as part of the overall state system. That being said, the Association of Oregon Counties remains committed to the 50-30-20 distribution of highway funds at this point as a means of adequately providing funds between cities and counties. I would note that the agreement for 50-30-20 was struck back in the mid-1980s at this point. And that we at that time had done a need study to take a look at the needs as well as how do you match revenue. We have not done a new study in, let's say, 20 years at this point nearly. We continue to believe there is need to do that. And as a result of that need study, there may be an adjustment in the distribution of state highway funds that would be warranted based on that new study. And at that time, I think it's appropriate to make those adjustments. And in the interim, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 50-30-20 sounds good to us. And the sooner we can move to that, recognizing that we're quite a ways away from that today, we're probably better off. And that would help the county's situation at this point. So, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Slack. Senator Starr.
I don't have a question, just a statement. I think that, speaking for myself, as we have put transportation funding packages together over the last several sessions, it's always been the goal of me or my goal to move us toward that 50-30-20 standard. And as we work this session to put together a funding package, again, it's the goal to have a 50-30-20 split, recognizing that our constituents don't differentiate between a city street, county road, or a state highway for the most part, and we just need to have a system that works well together and it's integrated. And I do recognize the significant needs that cities and counties have as it relates to primarily maintenance and preservation of existing infrastructure. And it serves our constituents well, I think, when we address this at the state level and take some pressure off cities and counties to raise taxes, fees, whatever, at the local level.
Mr. Chair, just to comment on Senator Starr's comments, if I might. Certainly, we believe that it's appropriate for the state to address the question of funding for roads, as looking at the state as a whole rather than doing it locally at this point. In that we only have two counties that raise some funds locally at this point, other than through maybe some limited property tax. Would note for you that the transportation funding bill that is in the House and will be considered soon has specifically in it that the allocation of revenue to be raised from House Bill 2120 is to be distributed 50-30-20 between the three parties. And we appreciate Senator Starr working to that endeavor also.
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you enlighten me on how the federal stimulus is going to flow into the counties and the cities and how this formula is affected by that?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, how long do we have?
It's 2 minutes.
Complicated. Let me just say, and again, we can talk offline if you'd like a little bit more, but the federal stimulus package dealing with transportation will bring the state of Oregon about $334 million. The state will get $234 million of that off the top, as a piece. Local government will get about $100 million. And based on the legislation that is coming out of Washington, D.C., the three transportation management areas will get about 50.6% of the $100 million. So that's Portland, Salem-Keizer, and Eugene-Springfield. They will get $50 million. The balance then is shared basically 60-40 between rural counties, okay, and cities. So at the end of the day, the counties will get about $27 million to share in the 36 counties outside of the MPOs of the three entities that I mentioned, and the cities will get what's left at that point. So it's not much money when you look at 36 counties and distributing $27 million.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Slack? Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
That's all we have signed up. Colleagues, this is one of the first salvos that we start actually talking about transportation funding and distribution. So, and the county piece is, as well as the city, the partnership that we have is a key part of that. So thank you, Senator Girard, for bringing this forward, because this issue is going to be a key part of what we do. So thank you very much. No, not yet. Okay. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 414. I think what I want to do in a moment is open a work session on Senate Bill 129. This is the motor carrier federal update. I know, Mr. Russell, do you want to speak to the Dash 4 amendment? Is that appropriate, or who would? Okay, I just have DMV. And then there's a Dash 5. Let's do the Dash 4. And then I'll explain the Dash 5 and ask our farm folks to come up on that. This is our bill that conforms with federal law, our regular update that we had before.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, my name is Tom McClellan. I'm the administrator of the Oregon DMV of the Department of Transportation. The Dash 4 amendments, let me just talk you through what's in those. I did provide testimony to you at the end of January to give some background on this, but based on the review of the federal regulations, we believe that there are a number of changes that need to be made, dealing primarily with sections 11 and 12. They were drafted to comply with the federal regulations. We believe they may have some unintended consequences, so those, we have a rewrite really to sections 11 and 12 of the bill. That was based on additional review by our legal counsel, dealing with also a section on civil penalties with some changes. I'd also talk to you, I think, earlier about removing the term knowingly from ORS 809-413, sub 7. Federal regulations compel a state to suspend the commercial driver license of a person who violates an out-of-service order for specified periods of time. It does not have the adjective that describes it as knowingly violated, or adverb, I guess it is, knowingly violating it. It changes the context, and so our recommendation is you take that word out of the statute to comply with the regulations. So those are the changes that we have in the Dash 4 amendment. Earlier I had indicated that we thought we should put in some changes dealing with medical certificates because of new federal regulations that had just come out. In discussions with the Oregon Trucking Association, we decided to wait on making those changes because it just came out and we don't have as many specifics as we'd like. So that is not in the Dash 4 amendment that is before you today. I'd also indicated in my testimony before that we believed there was a compliance issue dealing with farm endorsements. We did some additional checking, and a technical reading of the regulations would indicate that it is not required that the farm endorsement be canceled if a person has a CDL suspended. If they also have the CDL. We would encourage you to consider that still in this bill because of the public safety issues associated with a person continuing to drive when they have lost their CDL, right to operate a commercial motor vehicle with the CDL. But it is not, as I had indicated earlier, it is not a federal regulation compliance issue. So I wanted to clarify that for you on the record as well today.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Senator George.
Tom, could you give me an example of somebody who has had their CDL revoked but not their driver's license revoked? Because what I'm trying to get at is that if they get their CDL revoked for a technical issue because they unknowingly took something out of service, you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They could still work, in essence, using the farm endorsement because they still have a valid driver's license.
Yes.
So it seems like to me that this, it may be sort of a safety valve, they'd still have a place to work. Can you respond to that?
Yeah, the individual could continue to operate the commercial motor vehicle using that farm endorsement, which is attached to their passenger vehicle.
Right.
And that's an exception that's been granted in federal regulations and through Oregon statute to allow them to operate. There are different offenses for the operation of a commercial motor vehicle that you wouldn't be subject to if you're just operating your passenger vehicle. Turning types of convictions. There's a more stringent criteria on driving under the influence 0.04 blood alcohol level for the operation of a commercial vehicle versus, I think, it's 0.08 for a passenger. So there's some slightly different offenses that you might be subject to with the commercial driver license and with the passenger vehicle. I can go through a list of some of the failure to stop at a railroad signal when you're operating a commercial motor vehicle. There's different standards there than with a passenger vehicle. So there's things that we would recommend you continue to include in the statute, that if a person loses their commercial motor vehicle, commercial driver license, they should also lose the firearm endorsement because of those types of offenses. They're specified in the regulations. So,
Mr. Chair, could I?
Yeah.
If I get a list of that, because in my mind, if somebody lost their CDL but kept their driver's license, it seems like to me that there wasn't a violation so significant to take away their driving privileges. So if it was a more technical issue, the firearm endorsement is actually for a less technical type of driving. So I guess what I'm saying to you is that if I could see those, it'd make me a little bit more comfortable.
We can provide that for you, yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Anybody else want to comment on the Dash 4 amendment? Do you want it, Mr. Russell? Okay, no. Okay. That's fine. Tom, you might stay close by.
Do you want to adopt the Dash 4?
Let's wait a second. We'll probably do them together. Let's bring Mr. Beyer up and the others from Ag up here. I want to talk about a Dash 5. Thank you. Colleagues, let me just kind of go over this. I want to piggyback off what Mr. McClellan just said. It's a technicality in the law that if you lose the CDL that you could still operate a truck under a farm endorsement, even if you lost it. And I talked to some of the folks about this, and so I went through the ORSs that were applicable to this, and some are pretty serious, and I think we would all agree that technicality should not keep people driving who shouldn't be driving, but I was also sympathetic to some of the different tolerances, and what I was suggesting, and I'd like to get your feedback on, is, and I will tell you that, and I'm open to the committee if they don't want to do it at all and just totally suspend the farm endorsement also. I'm concerned about some of the issues involved here. And if someone were to lose their CDL, but they kept the farm endorsement, they would still be able to operate the truck. And you see the on Section 2, which is lines 11 and 12, what some of those offenses are. Now, Mr. McClellan just pointed out some, like stopping at a railroad crossing stuff, and those are significant, but others, when you get into 413, 403, are distributing controlled substances, driving while intoxicated, creating an injury, accident while intoxicated while driving the truck are pretty serious stuff, and so it was very difficult to say, you know, I didn't want to just say you kept driving your truck that way. What I was going to suggest, and I'm not totally comfortable with this, but I would be willing to do this if the committee is, and if they say just no, and that's where I want your feedback, is limit it to ORS 09-809-404, which I have before me, colleagues. This is the two-time loser one, if you do it twice, and that is the Department of Transportation suspend a person's commercial driver's license or right to apply for a commercial driver's license if they're disqualified from holding the license under the section, and they're disqualified if they have two or more of the following, and these are the serious ones. These are conviction for driving while intoxicated with the truck, a suspension for commercial for refusing to take a breath test, not performing the duties of a driver in an injury accident, or dealing or committing a felony involving manufacturing, distributing, or dispensing of drugs. And my feeling is that's a lot, and if you do it twice, that probably you still shouldn't be driving. And that was kind of, and then I would eliminate the other ORSs. No, the first-time offenses would not necessarily trigger a removal of the farm endorsement. Although I'm not totally comfortable with that, that was kind of what my thought was. I wanted to get your feedback to that and then the committee, because that was an issue we talked about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the Oregon City Council and the Oregon Dairy Farmers. Before I comment on your proposed amendment, which is the Dash 5, I'd just like to make sure that the committee, from the people I represent, their perspective on the farm endorsement. The farm endorsement is not a CDL. It is not a commercial driver's license. A farm endorsement is simply instrument to show that a person who is driving a larger-than-standard vehicle in very limited circumstances has got some level of training to operate that vehicle. It does not allow them to operate that vehicle for hire. They can only move the agricultural product for that farm, and then they have to do it within a limited range of the farm. So,
and that is how much? And how much is that?
150 miles.
Yeah. Okay.
So, a farm endorsement is not a commercial driver's license, and has never been intended to be a commercial driver's license. It's simply an instrument to show that a person who is operating a large vehicle has some level of training. To get to the proposed amendment that the chair suggests, when I first looked at the bill, my thought was I'd rather see Section 2 eliminated because of that exact reason. They're not the same. A CDL is not a farm endorsement. A farm endorsement is not a CDL. Mr. Chair has suggested limiting it to the two-time offense. That is something that I believe my people could live with. That's people who have demonstrated that the one time they didn't learn their lesson, the second time they probably should pay a price. The only question I would ask, and I don't have the answer to that, you may already have the answer, is what is the effect to a person holding a regular driver's license on those same sort of offenses under 809-404? I don't know the answer to that. I'm guessing there is a penalty for that under current law, so the person with the farm endorsement already gets some sort of a penalty. I don't know what that is. But, Mr. Chair, I think you've made a reasonable compromise by my perspective, and I'd be willing to move forward with that.
Thank you.
And for the record, Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau, anything I would say right now would be redundant to what Roger has stated for the record. I did just provide some information from DMV's website relating to farm endorsements and commercial driver's licenses. You can see that, as Roger stated, it is a limited endorsement, and I was interested to find out that the farm endorsement can actually be attached to either a Class C or a commercial driver's licenses. And a lot of my members do have CDLs because they do drive truck during the off season, so they would already fall under the statute that applies to CDLs. But as Roger said, we do see these as two separate functions. The other thing I did was I provided the committee with an abbreviated statutory reference of the original bill. The Dash 5 amendments would reflect that first ORS 809.404. And I agree with Roger that I think that's a reasonable compromise. It would be something that I'd have to go back to my people to make sure that we could support it before I could officially endorse it.
Okay. Senator Berger.
Chair, I have a question of you.
Yes.
Is it only the penalties that are imposed that is out of the compliance with the federal law?
Well, as was testified, it turns out that it's the federal law doesn't necessarily require that. It's kind of that's where there's a association. What Mr. McCollum testified was that we recommend that be consistent, but it's not required under federal law.
Okay.
Mr. Klein, would you come forward, please, just while our gentlemen are here? And I think, first of all, and I don't know if you could answer one of the questions that was brought up about, or at least one of the comments about, you know, the offenses that are tied to the Class C licenses as well as the other licenses. You want to just give some more clarity on that as well?
Well, let me list, Mr. Chair, let me list a few of the items that are currently not, would not affect a person's farm endorsement that would be affected if you lost your commercial driver license. Okay, so let me just go through a list of those. Operation of a commercial motor vehicle with a blood alcohol level of 0.04 or more. Operating a commercial motor vehicle while a CDL is suspended or revoked. Failure to stop for a railroad signal. Failure to follow rail crossing procedures for high-risk vehicles. Obstructing a rail crossing. Failure to slow and check that tracks are clear of approaching trains. Those are all railroad-related. Then there's a series of, it's classified as serious traffic violations, and those are the two or more within 3-year time frame that I think you were referencing. Examples there are exceeding the speed limit by 15 miles per hour or more while operating a commercial motor vehicle, operating a commercial motor vehicle without appropriate driving privileges, driving a commercial motor vehicle on the left on a curve or grade or an intersection or rail crossing, failure to drive a commercial motor vehicle within a lane, unsafe passing on the left or right while operating a commercial motor vehicle, following too closely in a commercial motor vehicle, violation of a traffic control law in a commercial motor vehicle that results in a fatal accident. Those are all in a category called serious traffic violations. And you can see those are all in operating a commercial motor vehicle, not in your passenger vehicle. And then there's a separate category on this is the violation of out-of-service orders that we those would also be affected by, if you lost your commercial driver license, you would also lose your farm endorsement if you had violated an out-of-service order. So that's a list that today the person would continue to operate for in the limits as you described, within 150 miles for farm purposes, the same types of vehicles that you could operate with a commercial driver license. That's, I think, the public policy question for the group to consider, is whether you still want those individuals to have that authority to operate those vehicles. It is not a federal regulation. It's just, to me, it's a question of state law. What would you like to have in place for really safety issues?
Do you have any, and I appreciate your position, and it is a very serious one, do you have any particular thought on the Dash 5, which would take the more serious offenses, the two times, to make that? I know, and I don't necessarily disagree with you, that the others should be also, but current law doesn't make it happen, so we are, either one would be strengthened and one would be more than the other, but in terms of saying, you know, two times with the more serious offenses would for sure, you know, keep you from being on the road. I just was curious about your thoughts on that from the department level. If we have the three choices, which is status quo, the committee decides just to eliminate the whole thing, or this, how you would view that?
Mr. Chair, there's really four categories here. There's the major offenses, which would cause a 1 year to a lifetime suspension, and that's where the blood alcohol level of 0.04 and above is in that category. Then there's four railroad crossing type offenses. Then you have your serious traffic violations where there's two or more in a three-year period. I wasn't sure when you suggested two or more if that was the same provision that's already in place today for loss of commercial motor vehicle, CDL, right, authority. And the fourth category is the violation of out-of-service orders. I would recommend that you keep it within those categories and not necessarily pick and choose among the different items within those four categories for ease of administration, if nothing else, and clarity for the drivers and for our staff as far as when it would be appropriate to, required to withdraw, to cancel the farm endorsement.
Well, 809-404 is more of the serious ones, and it's the two times. And just because I want people to think about it, that's, you know, we won't move those today. But I do want to get the sense of the committee on this because it is a policy issue question here. And as all of our witnesses testified, it, you know, it can be a little complicated. Questions? Senator Starr?
I don't have a question. I think that we have on the table now an agreed to compromise that I think addresses it in a rational fashion. I'd be happy to move forward with the, I mean, we've heard the testimony. At least I've had conversations outside the room with everybody that's at the table now. So obviously it's up to you, but I'm comfortable with the compromise that you've crafted in the Dash 5 amendment. So for what it's worth.
Thank you, Senator. I just heard a couple of ours had asked about their members, and that's why I wanted to be sensitive to that.
Okay.
But let's see. Other questions or thoughts by the committee on this issue? No? I'll tell you what we'll do. I just, you know, they're not in a huge hurry. Let's set this for work session, Mr. Stembridge, next week. We don't have to wait till Thursday. I just want to make sure the members look at this carefully and think about it, and we will do what the wish of the committee is, but I can just have this sense that I think everybody needs a couple more days.
Would you like to carry this over till Monday, or do you want to do Wednesday?
Let's carry it over to Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Okay. If that's comfortable, that closes the work session on 129. Okay, where is we? Senator Dingfelder is coming here shortly. So I think what we'll do is open up public hearing on Senate Bill 36, and we'll probably pause this one for a little bit when she shows. But we might as well get started on it. Mr. Stemridge.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 36 authorizes Multnomah County to impose tolls on bridges under its jurisdiction, span the Willamette River. You have the Dash 1 amendment, which actually replaces the measure technically. It has much the same language, except it adds bridges that Multnomah County operates and maintains under City of Portland jurisdiction that span the Willamette River.
Okay, and we have a trio from Multnomah County, led by Mr. Kennedy. If you folks want to come forward. Just a little background on this, colleagues. 2 years ago, Senator Starr, we were talking about this issue with folks from Multnomah County about different options in the future for revenue, congestion pricing, and there was a dispute that, from the chair of Multnomah County as to whether they had explicit authority, should at some point they want to do this, as the road authority to toll the bridges that they maintain, because they have to maintain them even though they're obviously major thoroughfares. And our legislative council was of the opinion that the current law allowed them as the road authority to toll those bridges. Multnomah County insisted that it wasn't that clear and asked that we give them clear authority to toll the bridges and clean up the statute that we think already exists, but so that there was no ambiguity. So we've agreed to do that, and that's why we're here today. And Mr. Kennedy, I'll let you begin.
Thank you, Chair Metzger, members of the committee for record. Phil Kennedy Wong, Multnomah County. Just to follow from what the chair has said, this is essentially what we view as a housekeeping bill to clarify language that was in a previous understanding was made with Senate Bill 1022. I do want to make very clear, though, that although this bill would give Multnomah County the authority, the Board of County Commissioners has not made any decisions on tolling. This simply just gives a tool for the county, and in fact, we would say for the entire metro region, to consider as we look at finding funding to maintain the system that we already have in place. I do want to clarify also again that Multnomah County has been participating in both state and regional conversations on transportation funding, and that any conversation or any discussion about tolling, we would certainly involve all the stakeholders, both private and public, in that conversation before any type of decision on that matter would be made. Joining me here today is Kim Peoples, who is the county road manager, and also Matthew Ryan, who is attorney with our county. Mr. Peoples will explain the Dash 1 amendments that we have for the bill and clarify why it is that we're asking for the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Metzger and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kim Peoples, and I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 36, which amends ORS Chapters 382 and 383, relating to interstate bridges and tollways, respectively. For the record, again, my name is Kim Peoples, and I'm the road manager. With me is Matthew Ryan, county attorney, who is here to answer any questions you may have on the Dash 1 amendments. Multnomah County supports the proposed amendments to provide the Board of County Commissioners the authority to establish and collect tolls for the Willamette River bridges that the county currently maintains and operates. Multnomah County is charged under ORS 382.305 to ORS 382.330 with the responsibility to operate and maintain the Willamette River bridges owned by or leased to the City of Portland or Multnomah County and which are located in the City of Portland. There are five bridges at this time subject to these statutes. They are the Selwood, Hawthorne, Morrison, Burnside, and Broadway bridges. Yet, under ORS 382.325, Section 5, the county is also prohibited from collecting compensation from the users of these bridges to fund such a responsibility. The 2007 legislature took this matter up through Senate Bill 1022, but unfortunately the legislation did not clarify sufficiently the authority of Multnomah County to toll the Willamette River bridges located in the city of Portland. Senate Bill 36 and the Dash 1 amendments performs the necessary housekeeping by explicitly removing prohibitory language found in ORS 382.325 Section 5 and adding clear authority to ORS 382.310 for those bridges operated and maintained by Multnomah County. For the record, the Board of County Commissioners has not made any decision to toll any of its bridges. It would not do so without involving the public, the business community, and government partners both in the region and the state. Multnomah County urges the Senate Business and Transportation Committee to adopt Senate Bill 36 with the Dash 1 amendments. And I'd like to take time now to thank you very much for the opportunity to testify before you today. And at this time, I'd like to entertain questions. Matthew Ryan, Philip, and myself.
Okay. Questions for our guests from Multnomah County. Senator Schrader.
I was just going to clarify, this is essentially enabling legislation.
Correct.
As I understand it. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you all. John Charles and Ralph Groner, please.
Charles stepped out of the room.
I guess you're up, Ralph.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Ralph Groner, representing American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. The employees of this division happen to be members of my Public Works local. However, my comment is in support, although it's housekeeping. Actually, the article in the Oregonian the other day about the lack of money and the cuts of all my members in Multnomah County show that they lack the arrows in the quiver that allows them to get the things done that cities do. Counties are in terrible shape, not only in their highways and their roads, but so they need this as an arrow. I frankly told Cam Gilmore, Clackamas County, I was on their roads group. I said, you know, frankly, we're never going to get enough gas tax, given you know why, all the problems we're going to have in the future. I frankly see the city succeeding quite well, at least in my county, seven or eight of them, with a utility fee. And I said, what we ought to have is a statewide utility fee on every home. Just like my water, sewer, I pay for roads. It is a utility. And use your limited gas tax you've got remaining, just like we did for schools in 95. We equalized the rural areas. And so that's my thought. That count, Multnomah County and all the other counties, particularly Clackamas and Washington, as you know, depend on those bridges. The citizens of the whole region depend on those bridges. And Multnomah County, I support if they have to do a toll, but it seems to me there ought to be a much more in the long run when they get to that testimony, a more fair system, since it's not just Multnomah County using the Selwood. We know who uses that, 70% or so are my Clackamas County citizens. So we just favor that as a union, as another arrow in their quiver to maybe if they need it to be able to resolve their bridge problems.
Thank you, Mr. Groner. Well, you can stay there. Ms. Charles, because I had called you up. Why don't you come on up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Charles, president of Cascade Policy Institute. I'll be brief. I do support Senate Bill 36. I do support the idea of tolling as a user fee for reasons I've discussed in previous testimony. My one concern is I noticed that one of your alert staff members in the revenue impact of proposed legislation memo to you points out in the impact explanation that it is likely that the county will bond for the cost of a new bridge and then toll to pay off those bonds. As long as these tolls in 36 are used simply to maintain bridges, that's fine. But if there is some hidden agenda here to build the bridge that's being planned over the river over towards OMSI to be usable for light rail, streetcars, skateboarders, wheelchairs, pads, bikes, everything except motor vehicles, and then pay that off with tolls from motor vehicles, that's a real problem. But if that's not part of the plan, if this is simply to take existing bridges, maintain, and improve them with tolls, presumably electronically collected conveniently from users, I think that is an appropriate method to do business.
Well, thank you, Mr. Charles. And whether it's local revenues or state revenues, they still fall under the constitutional requirement. You know, if it's for use or operation of a motor vehicle, it still falls under that very narrow definition. So, but I'm sure there would be a lively debate at Multnomah County Board of Commissioners someday. Mm-hmm. Hopefully sooner rather than later, actually, because, I mean, in all seriousness, and we've talked about this, is that the congestion and everything else in our metro area is a huge issue. We need to have a lot of tools and then have a public discussion about which tools are most effective, and this is another one that will help.
Yeah, yeah.
We want to take away, first of all, impediments to having these kinds of discussions, and then the policy will have an opportunity to be free-flowing and you know, maintain our infrastructure and be able to have those who use the system continue to be paying for it in the manner in which they would like to use it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for anybody here? Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. How's any concerns about the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
On the question, I understood you answered, Ms. Charles, but could this bill be interpreted to build something that was a non-vehicle bridge? Or
well, first of all, it's just enabling the toll, first of
right,
all.
Right.
But the constitutional requirement of operating motor vehicle and any fees associated with that still falls under the constitutional limitation. So, for example, I think it's quite confident to say they could not toll Multnomah County Bridge and build a pedestrian walkway or something like that. That doesn't mean they can't build another bridge with a number of things, light rail, but they would have to come from different sources of money, just like with Columbia River Crossing. It would have to fit those requirements. Let's close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 36.
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 36.
Senator Starr has moved the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 36. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 36 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Any objection? We now know who the bridge tolls. Tolls for thee. No objection, it passes. Who would like to carry the bill?
Okay.
Senator Starr will carry the bill. Okay, Senator Dingfelder is here. So let's open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 322. And Mr. Stambridge will give us a brief overview, and we'll hear from the Senator.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 322 directs the Oregon Department of Transportation to provide receptacles at each roadside rest area for the collection of recyclables.
Okay. Welcome, Senator Dingfelder.
Thank you, Chair Metzger and members of the committee, and really appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 322 today. As you can see, this is a short and simple bill, and if enacted, it will create recycling options at our state's roadside rest areas. As some background, during the interim, I was contacted by a constituent who emailed me and asked why Oregon did not have recycling bins at rest areas, especially when we're supposed to be a national leader in this area. He had recently been in another state that had recycling at rest stops, and I thought, that's a great question. Started looking into it and found out that he was right, and I had never recalled seeing recycling bins at our rest stops, and did some research and since learned that many other states actually do have recycling at rest stops. And so we are behind the times, and our state, as you know, has a long commitment to recycling. We recently expanded our bottle bill, and many Oregonians are proud of our recycling ethic. However, in this particular area, there are other states that are ahead of us. Oregon Department of Transportation currently provides garbage service, but the lack of recycling service at Oregon 64 rest areas mean that other states are leading the way and leaving Oregon behind. As you can see in the testimony, I won't read it, but there are several other states that we looked into that do have programs, Indiana, Wisconsin, Texas, California. And interestingly, Texas has implemented one of the most ambitious rest area recycling programs of any state in the nation. And in 1996, Texas opened up an interactive exhibit at a rest area. This rest area provides not only facilities for recycling, but also educational opportunities for the public about recycling. So nothing in Senate Bill 3322 goes as far as Texas's program. However, these examples put Oregon's current recycling efforts in perspective. So this bill falls into Oregon's long tradition of providing easy ways to preserve our state's environment and livability. And so for this reason, I ask that you support Senate Bill 322.
Thank you, Senator. Chair, thanks for bringing this forward.
Questions? I'd be happy to answer any easy questions.
Yeah, thanks. Senator Berger.
Thank you. This is a great bill. Did you think when you heard from the constituent, I wish I'd thought of that?
Absolutely. But I have some very smart constituents. And I do have to give credit also to Commissioner Jeff Kogan from Multnomah County, because it was a constituent who contacted him first, and he forwarded it to me because it was a state responsibility, and we actually shared that constituent. And I can't speak for Multnomah County, but that particular commissioner thought it was a great idea as well and asked me to look into it.
Mm-hmm. Those of us who are so excited about the expansion of the bottle bill, all I could think of was the beaches. So roadside areas makes perfectly good sense. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator George.
Thank you, Senator, for coming to visit us. Real quickly, I'm thinking of more rural areas, obviously in urban areas where there's a lot of recycling. Some rural areas, do we have recycling programs in all parts of the state at this point? And we do have the infrastructure in the more remote parts of the state to actually have a two-path program.
I do know that there are some folks from the Refuse and Haulers Association that's going to speak to that, but pretty much it's not curbside, obviously, throughout all of the state of Oregon, but we do have one of the most ambitious recycling programs of any state. We do have one of the highest recycling rates of any state, and, of course, with the bottle bill expansion, additional infrastructure. So, DEQ is really the agency that oversees that, and my understanding is that there is a requirement that there's recycling opportunities in both urban and rural areas. I can speak to the recently passed e-waste legislation, that was part of our legislation, thanks to the chair here. That was an idea I came to him, I think it was 7 years ago, and so 7 years later, we now have a program. We made sure in that bill that rural areas were served, and we said there had to be a program in every county and for cities 10,000 or greater. But it's certainly a good point to bring up, because there are some areas, rest areas in very rural areas, and I think, the way you could approach that is maybe to have a phased approach.
Mr. Chairman, real quick comment. Specifically, when you did this, I thought, wow, great, what a great idea. And then I started thinking about when I was driving out near Clarno, I think that's in Senator Farioli's district, and there was a little rest stop there with a fossil bed, and there was almost no traffic through that area. And I thought, if you actually, there's so little garbage, but they came by and picked it up. If you had to take it to two different locations to get rid of it, you could actually have much more of a, I guess we'd say, carbon footprint, driving it another 100 miles to take it to a recycler for a few bottles, when it would be much more efficient and actually cleaner for the environment if you didn't drive that far. So I was just wondering if that was any, if we had any feedback, so I guess I'll wait. But
you'll hear from, and Mr. Chair and Senator George, you will hear from the recyclers. That, I mean, it's an issue. Not just at rest stops, but, I mean, there's always the issue of, is it more efficient to recycle versus taking something to a landfill? And there's a lot of factors that go into it. Cost recovery, is there actually value for that material at any point? But, we've made a decision. We do have recycling goals set for the state. So we've made a policy decision, the past legislatures has, that said, we want to promote recycling. We actually have goals. We have goals for each type of material. And so we already have those goals in place. We just haven't implemented it at our rest stops.
Thank you.
Senator Starr.
I just want to know, would I be able to recycle my computer products at the rest areas? I got to figure out where I'm supposed to take those. And if I knew I could take them to the rest area, then that would just be fantastic.
Probably not, but I can tell you how you can find out, because DEQ has a very user-friendly website that lists all of...
How would I not know to go to DEQ's website?
Website. That's
all right. Thank you, Ms.
That's why I'm here. I'm here to serve.
Okay, sure.
Senator Schrader.
I just have a logistics piece here. I want to make sure I'm understanding it. So ODOT will be putting the bins out, but it will actually be the
private sector who picks them up, sorts them? I mean, there
that
seems
would
to
be up to
pieces of this, and I'm wondering, what are the logistics?
Good questions, Senator and Mr. Chair. I asked some of the same questions. My understanding is, and of course I'm not going to speak for ODOT because I know they're behind me wanting to come up here and answer these questions, but they do, my understanding is that ODOT does their own collection, garbage collection at most of their rest stops, but I think there's opportunities to explore all different options, contracting out, or looking at taking that material, maybe collecting it somewhere centrally. Well, the thing about recyclables is, unlike garbage, you can have them sitting around for a while. They're not as typically as smelly. You know, a water bottle or a Coke bottle isn't as bad as obviously if you have compostable garbage you don't want sitting around for a while. But I think there's some opportunities to explore some creative options here. I am not the expert. I know a lot about recycling, but there's people here that know a lot more, and I'm sure that they're going to be sharing some ideas with you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Amy Joyce, who we're going to designate as the collector, and Holly Sears.
I can sit right behind you.
Why don't we start with the department, and then we'll go to the Refuge and Recycling Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. Senate Bill 322 would instruct the department to install recycling facilities at roadside rest areas. Along state highways, there are approximately 76 such facilities. The number used earlier was 64. We have many locations where there are two different facilities on either side of the highway, so it is a bit more than that, about 76. Some of those are owned and operated by the Department of Transportation. About 30 of those are actually technically state parks, owned and operated by state parks, but are sort of part of the rest area system along state highways. And we have one rest area that's actually a city park, run by a city, and ODOT pays maintenance fees to both parks and to that city. So Senate Bill 322 would have us put recycling facilities in all of these rest areas, whether ODOT owns and controls it or parks or a city. So the bill does raise a couple of concerns for the department. One is a quick question about where the bill does apply. Does it apply to all of those rest areas along state highways, regardless of whether ODOT operates it or not? Also, in some parts of the state, we are concerned that there aren't any recycling centers nearby, so it's not clear what ODOT would do with the collected materials. And lastly, rest areas generally are unattended facilities, and our understanding is that, in general, an unattended recycling facility results in a lot of contamination. And also, based on our experience with vandalism and theft at rest areas, we're concerned that there might even be a higher rate of contamination than your typical unattended recycling center. So we do have some recommendations that might help make the bill more feasible. First, to clarify which rest areas we're talking about, so we can be sure what we're being told to do. And then perhaps also limit the bill's application to rest areas in locations where a recycling center is nearby, that we could accommodate that instruction. So in summary, ODOT already does a great deal of recycling, and we support the goals of recycling both for the environment and for economic reasons, and with a few changes that might take care of our concerns.
Thank you, Ms. Joyce. Let's hear from Ms. Sears.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Holly Sears, and I'm the Governmental Affairs Director for the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association, also known as ORA. ORA is a statewide trade association that represents private solid waste haulers and solid waste management companies here in Oregon. Our members collect and process most of Oregon's residential and commercial recyclable materials and garbage, as well as operate material recovery facilities and Oregon solid waste transfer stations and landfills. ORA members are strong advocates of recycling. We are always looking for ways to improve our recycling programs, and we work closely with our cities and counties to do so. However, Senate Bill 322 does raise some questions for us, so we just wanted to make you aware of that today. As a concept, Senate Bill 322 is a very intriguing idea. However, in practice, a program like this may be difficult to implement due to the cost to collect potentially a low yield of quality recyclable materials at these facilities. In our members' experience, controlling the quality of recyclable materials at unstaffed facilities, such as recycling depots or quite possibly roadside rest stop areas, this presents a big challenge for us. Contamination in the recycling stream at roadside rest stops can be caused by people who have good intentions to recycle, but an item that is part of a recycling program in that person's home city or county or even home state might not be part of the recycling program where that rest stop is located. So they end up throwing something into the container that might be recyclable in their home state, but is not recyclable here in Oregon, and thereby they contaminate the stream. Contamination can also be caused if the garbage container is full and people are just looking for a free place to unload their unwanted garbage. In either case, how contamination would be dealt with at a roadside rest stop area is kind of the key question we have about this bill. Additionally, Oregon recycling programs keep glass separate from other recyclable materials because glass causes damage to equipment at material recovery and processing facilities that sort recyclable materials, and it's also a contaminant in paper recycling in particular. As written, the bill includes glass as one of the materials to be collected at a roadside rest stop area, so this would result in a minimum of 2 containers that are needed at each rest stop location and thereby increasing the cost of this program. Or feels that there are several issues that to consider in implementing a proposal such as this, not just contamination, but the cost and what materials might be included in the program, as well as the location of those receptacles is important to us. It is an intriguing idea, but with many ideas, sometimes they're not always the easiest to implement, but we would be more than willing to sit down and discuss this with the Senator and ODOT to talk about it further. And thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. So the comment that was brought up earlier for most of the ODOT recycling ones, do your members pick those up, or, again, are they the recipients of the work that ODOT does? Is that primary, or do you have some of those contracts?
Chair Metzger, I think it's a little bit of both. I think I'll defer to ODOT to answer some of that question, but you are correct in that we do receive, our material recovery facilities do receive that material, and oftentimes at unstaffed facilities it is just very contaminated. So working through that issue would be our key question, because we would hate to send something to those facilities, material to those facilities that is so contaminated that it would end up having to be landfilled. So you go to all this effort, and really there's just such a low yield of quality recyclable materials.
Chair Metzger, in terms of how ODOT handles garbage today, there's sort of a split at a number of our rest stops. ODOT staff goes, picks up the garbage, takes it back probably to the maintenance yard and disposes of it. For a good chunk of our rest areas, it's a private contract with a janitorial service. In some cases, that our contractor is state parks. I'm aware of at least one major rest stop, the Bell Dock, up between Salem and Portland, where there's a huge drop box. So the janitorial staff, will dump garbage in there, and then when it's full, we call the private hauler who hauls away the drop box and leaves a new empty one. Mm-hmm. So a mix, but mostly it's us or our janitorial private contractors who cart it away.
Okay, because one thing just listening to the testimony on this is, to me, it wouldn't be rocket science. It was, we have some assumptions. They may be accurate assumptions. Mm-hmm. We just don't know. The ones like Senator George, out in the middle of Quarno or whatever, probably the yield is not as effective. Ballock, where I stop on occasion when I'm driving from Mount Hood just to stop for a few minutes, very active, probably gets a lot of activity for collection because it is so highly trafficked. So, especially when you talk about contamination or stuff that sits around, probably sits around Clarno a lot more than it does there because people have to service it much more often because of the volume. And it would seem to me that probably the best way, and since we all try to meet our goals, and certainly the transportation department is one of those that's really being looked at to help us with this, is to answer some of those questions, probably could be done pretty cheaply and without a lot of hassle by maybe selecting just a few of the high traffic ones on I-5 to where you have a lot of attention to those anyway, and you have a lot of traffic there and people coming and taking, and maybe doing a few of those high traffic ones for recycling, testing some of the assumptions we have, and then we can come back and see whether they were accurate or not, or how we might expand it based on that information. Mm-hmm. And give this a go and see, because as Senator Dingfelder pointed out, a lot of states are doing it, so maybe they have a lot of that problem, maybe they don't, but I would think that we could probably get a pretty good idea by selecting some key areas where there's a lot of travel without having to go 100% and then finding out they were all right and have to figure out a new solution. I mean, would that seem to make sense to you?
Chair Metzger, yes.
Questions? Yes, Senator.
I just wanted to ask about cost, because when you make the deposit on a certain type of, like a water bottle, and then you don't go get it because you throw it into the recycling bin at the rest stop, then provided it was bought in your area or state, but you get that money, isn't that right?
Chair Metzger, Senator Verger, no, we do not. We take that material, and it gets processed, and it gets baled, and we sell that material. The scrap, we get the scrap value of that material, but we do not get the deposit on that material. We don't
redeem
it.
Distribute it as?
That's correct.
Okay.
I just want to clarify, Senator Metzger, because you were talking as if maybe we could, again, test some underlying assumptions with a pilot mm-hmm. kind of program. So my question is this necessary to legislate this, or is it something that Aura with ODOT and Senator Dingfelder, I mean, that's what I'm trying to understand. Is it just something that ODOT knows that we would like to see something like that happen, but it doesn't have to be codified at this point?
You're talking about the wink, wink, nod, nod.
I'm talking about, if it's a pilot program, do we amend this to say a pilot program where we're going to look and test underlying assumptions, or is it just something we as policymakers suggest that ODOT do? I guess I'm trying to tease that.
I think the suggestion you make is very possible.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I think there's a number of approaches that we might achieve this goal. Legislation is one of them. Conversations can be another. And we'll kind of... But I like the idea, Senator Dingfelder, and I think a lot of people in the committee like it. And we would like to have some answers to some of those questions, either to modify, validate why we need to do this more, and we don't do that until we try it in some form. So I appreciate that. We'll keep working on this and bring it back, and we'll have some conversations about how we might do that.
76 places to take your old computers.
There you go. All right. Thank you all. Closed public hearing on Senate Bill 322. Mr. Stembridge, next week.
Monday, you have a little bit of an agriculture day again. We'll bring back Senate Bills 409 and 185 for work sessions. You also have a new bill, Senate Bill 140, on real estate licensees.
Okay, and then, colleagues, just kind of an update. Senator Starr represented our committee yesterday morning at the Department of Transportation meeting of the Transportation Commission, and talked about the federal stimulus, which they had a discussion. They did authorize a couple of programs, but agreed to withhold authorization until a week from Friday on other projects, until such time as we could provide some input and have them come to our committee and talk about that and how this might relate to what we're trying to do in transportation. So Mr. Stembridge, we'll be talking about that if you haven't already, but we're going to try to coordinate maybe a joint meeting with the House sometime between now and Friday, a week from Friday, so that we can provide some input to the Commission. So what I'd like to have you do, if you don't have the list, I know or does everybody have the federal list that they gave us that ODOT provided?
I do.
Has the projects that they were recommending?
Yes.
If not, see Mr. Stembridge, and he'll give it to you. I know it was emailed to me. Look at that list, maybe have conversations with any of the ODOT folks, and then hopefully sometime next week we will have this joint meeting with the department, and we'll talk about those projects, provide our input to what are the first ones that go out the door, and how that correlates with the efforts that we will be getting soon on transportation funding for the state. So I appreciate Senator Starr helping with that. So with that, we're adjourned.